Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Gianna Rayburn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Hey there, bestie. I'm Lori Ami, your What to Read Next podcast host. Join me as we dive into exciting new reads that'll have you reaching for your TBR pile in no time. From gripping mysteries to spicy romances, we'll explore it all and help you find your next favorite book. So grab a cup of tea, cozy it up, and let's discover some amazing reads together. Hi, Ashley. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
So happy to have you here. So this is a different, we're going to talk about books, but we're going to talk about like the run of the books that we normally talk about. We're going to talk about how we can afford a book collection and pursuing book-related hobbies and just hobbies itself. I know that we're in a financial interesting time. There's inflation, there's such different expenses, things that are more expensive than we were. We may not be earning enough to cover. We may be pursuing hobbies that are a little bit more expensive. And so how can you manage it all? So actually, help a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, such a great question too. I'm excited to dive into how to manage it all, right? That's a big one. So I'm Ashley. I founded a company called The Fiscal Femme, where I help people de-stress their money and reach their money goals, which are really their life dreams and goals. So it's an honor and privilege to get to do that every day. And a passion of mine is getting people wealthy, women wealthy. And I've been doing it for now like 14 years, which is wild.
Yeah.
And about working in finance, but still knew nothing about my own money. And it all started when I was sharing my own journey as I was figuring it out.
We've known each other for as long as you've been doing this business, I think. And you were in my first podcast 10 years ago or 9 years ago, which is like that podcast no longer exists. But you're early in that podcast journey, because I was like, I knew money was an important part of my journey. I didn't think because it's the same thing you deal with clear, you still deal with like work. Money is just like another driver, and I've been paying attention to money, but I've been living the girl math world too. And so it's interesting to see, like, now I'm part of the money club and I'm seeing so much more progress because I had the foundation of like the knowledge, but now I'm able to put together these specifics. So talk to us about the money club first, and then we'll get into the thing about money.
Yes. And to your point on how long we've known each other, I was thinking about how did we meet, but it's been so long that we've been connected and watching each other's careers and journeys, but It is a money journey. It's like, it's the good news and bad news is you don't have to have it all figured out, but the bad news is you're never done. And so that is one of the reasons that I'm obsessed with the new money club that I launched, because it's a lifelong thing. And so we might as well make it fun. We might as well do it together. We might as well have some accountability and lifelong learning along the way. And so I came up with the idea because I was thinking, if I could only give 3 pieces of financial advice for the rest of my life, what would it be? And it would be to pay yourself first, which is setting up an auto transfer, no matter how small, to just set aside money per paycheck to your savings.
Yeah.
Because for most of us, if we don't do that, there's just never going to be money left over, no matter how much we earn. There are unicorns out there who can save that way by just seeing what's left. But for most of us, having the auto transfer is really helpful. But that is something you can set that up and forget it and check in on it. But the parts that kind of are forever are the other 2 pieces of advice, which is why I started the Money Club. It's to have money parties, which are time we set aside every month to track our spending, to check in on our goals, to handle any of the money to-dos that have come up. And that's kind of a forever practice. And then also to have investing parties and get investing to build wealth, because unfortunately, we can't really save our way to wealth. We want to be having our money grow and work for us. And when we're even investing small amounts each month, they can really grow and compound to tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and millions of dollars over the long term. So we in the Money Club have lessons on budgeting, on putting together financial plans, on investing. And then there's time each month for having our money parties, actually setting aside time to invest. And then there's the clubhouse where we're all kind of hanging out and sharing our wins and asking questions. And I've been throwing in some other fun events like office hours. And we have a Nerdy Money series this week on just the behind the scenes of how I think about certain financial decisions. This month, we're talking about how I decided between two different types of mortgages. So it's been really fun, especially because it's brand new. The founding members, I've been able to implement what your all's feedback is. And so it's driving like what the events are, what the topics are, how we structure it. And so it's been really fun to see it evolve and grow and have you be a part of it.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I think it's okay. I was intimidated by the money party. I was like, oh, it's taking me so long. It literally picked me. The money party, essentially, you put what you have spent on the month, last month into a spreadsheet. You just see where things are, where the money's going. It took me literally like 20 minutes, like going through all the different accounts and just putting in a one place and seeing the categories and seeing the shifts. Like I've shifted, I'm moving away from eating out a lot to actually eating in. And I was able to see the number change from like a high amount to like a lower amount in a very thankful aspect. Like it's just so I can celebrate your win. So it's not like it was intimidating at first to realize it's like, oh, I'm tracking my spending. It's just, it's like a diet. It's like tracking your calories, but it's really not. It's actually just giving yourself like pat on the back. We did a good job, or maybe something like, oh, maybe I can try something different next time. I'm a strong believer, like, you don't need to have a case of the buckets. Like, we can just go, like, just be like, okay, I made a mistake. I can just move on and just keep going from start from that moment on.
Yes. Yes, as much as possible, if we can, to remove the judgment of it, because it's literally just what we spent, right? And we're just looking at it, and we can just, everyone has different values and priorities with their money. And it ties in perfectly to this hobbies conversation, because we often think of budgets or plans as restrictive. But if, let's say, you want that book collection, or we're starting to do some gardening here on our roof deck, like when you build that in and it works with your financial plan, you can actually not feel guilty about it and enjoy it more because you've built it in and it's part of it. So I think often we think it's less stressful to not have a plan and to not have to look at it. But then we're kind of always worried. And anytime we're spending on something that's not a need, we might feel guilty about it or like we shouldn't be able to do it. Whereas the whole point of having money is, of course, to have stability and peace of mind, but also to enjoy your life.
Yeah. And let's talk about money. So hobbies is something that I know we think about life and it's like you work, you maybe have kids, you may have different spaces, but there's something I think a millennial and Gen Z, like the younger generation, like have pursued this idea of hobbies, pursuing this idea. I think 2020 made us stop and realize like we have all this time in the world and pursue the thought radio, the TikTok, the books, the reading for fun. And so this is something that I pursue. I'll talk about my experience. I am childless for choice. I don't have kids. I lived in a very expensive city. I've been living in a very expensive city. So it's very like, and I've been under earning for most of my time, this unconscious way of under earning. And so I had to be very mindful about my spending. And I started reading in 2016. And I was in a job that was only paying $20 an hour. And I had I had a lot of free time, but I had like no interest in pursuing something to make. And I started to read, and I started to read paper books because I didn't really, I couldn't have access to the library, but I didn't want to get new books in the library. So I was paying 99 cents, but I was reading a book a day. The 99 cents to $1.99 to $2.99, they all, like, a little, those little expenses, all a lot. So it would just be enough. And so I had to realize I was like, okay, how can I make this on a budget? And one of my passions is to teach you how to read on a budget. But there's a lot of friends that are like, you love this book, you want to buy this special edition, you want to buy this other edition, you want to have it in audio and all these different memberships and all these different streaming. So it all adds up. And they're like, how can I afford this? So talk to us about how can we revisit a book. We can buy the books, we can travel things that we want, but not have the guilt, but at the same time, be more mindful of what there is.
Yes. Oh my gosh, so many things come to mind. So, and that's incredible. A book a day. Like, you probably have so many fun ideas and new stories in your mind, and so enriching. So, a few things. So, the first thing, I think something that I like to think about is being fabulously frugal. Mm-hmm. And it's getting clear on what about something is important to you and letting go of the other parts.
Yes.
So, and then that way you can honor the part that's important, but not spend on the parts that aren't. So for example, if I love travel and the really important part for me is quality time with a friend and exploring a new place, then yeah. I can kind of skip the expensive hotel or the trendy neighborhood, but maybe someone else that's really important, they want the luxury of the hotel. So knowing what's important and not doing things just because other people are doing them or because it's what we've always done. So really zeroing in on, I want to spend on the parts that are important. So if it that might mean for some people, it is library books. For others, if it's a collection that's important, they don't want to be returning the books, right? They want to be keeping them and seeing them and having a reference to the wonderful experience of reading it. So there's different. So really thinking about what about this hobby is important and what are the parts that I think it's worth spending on and letting go of the rest. That can really reduce the amount we spend right off the bat. I think also when we start a new hobby, I think there could be a tendency to, we're really excited and we want to invest a lot in this new hobby. Like, I haven't played pickleball, but I'm going to buy all the equipment, right?
Yeah.
I'm ready to go. And then we start playing and realize, oh, I didn't actually really like this, or I'm not doing it. So whenever I try to start something, I say, is there a way I can do it for free or little to no money, just to make sure that this is something that I'm interested in and enjoy? And some hobbies don't have a high cost of entry, right? You can just get started. But others, there's equipment, there's products, there's things that we need. So to try to say, is there a way that I can test this for a lower minimal cost? And that could be borrowing or second hand or buying a free way first, even if it's not as ideal. That way, as we're experimenting with different things, we're not necessarily going all in and investing. And it's almost like, as I prove to myself that this is something I'm going to keep up with, then I really start investing over time and trying to do it slowly, just to make sure that it's just very easy to get caught up on an impulse, especially yeah. when it's something we enjoy and that we're very excited about. And so I think those two things, and then building it into the plan, like you mentioned. And of course, there are levels of income where the plan just won't work. Yeah. But I still think it's important to have the plan, even if it's not saying something that we want to see, because then we can do something about it, whether that is shift something else or see, oh, if I earned more, I could really afford to invest in this hobby and then maybe get that motivation, or just know, what's that number I'm trying to increase my earnings by? Like, is there a way I could earn that? So regardless of if it's currently workable, I do think putting it into that spending plan is valuable just for our brains to get to work on figuring out how to make
it. Yeah. And how do you build spending plan? So if we're just basically looking at the fixed income, your variable income, and then maybe project it, maybe put some buckets of money.
Yes. So I can send a template that I used to get started, but basically in your spending plan, I like to look at the full year because at least like 1 to 2 yeah. years has been, but just because there are things that happen in certain months that aren't happening every single month. And yeah. when we plan for just the month, we miss things. So looking ahead for the next 12 months, next 24 months. But to make it accurate, I do like to look at the past.
Yes.
So looking at the last month at a minimum, once you get that, maybe look at the month before, even scanning through old statements. It could be quick just to see, was there something that happens once a year that I might forget about that not happening all the time, so that the historical numbers and knowing what happened helps us decide what's realistic for the future. Mm-hmm. And then, yes, I like to look at income. So you could have, and when you look at income, what actually hits your bank account?
Yeah,
because that's the money you have to allocate. Unfortunately, it's different than our salary divided by 12 or 24. So, and looking at that, putting that at the top, any variable income you have as well, doing your best to estimate it. And I usually would estimate you could have a version of your goal, but then also a more minimal amount so that it just feels like in a down month, it feels more realistic. And then,
yes,
what you spend. And each line is a different spending item. Like it could be groceries, shopping, dining out, your bills, different bills, and keeping it as simple as possible at first. And you can always make it more detailed later if you want to see something broken out. But like you said, at first it can feel daunting. And so as simple as we can make it for ourselves so that we, and then once you do it and you see, oh, this didn't take too long, I'm really curious about understanding what of my shopping is for like household goods versus fun shopping. So I'll break that out and you can get more playful with it once you catch the bug and enjoy doing it. But at first, keeping it as simple for yourself is helpful, I think. And I know people who do it by hand too. It's like having a Google Sheet or a spreadsheet feels daunting. So what we really want to do is just know where our money's going. And it sounds simple, but so many of us don't. And when we estimate, we're really off. So it's sometimes higher and sometimes lower. So knowing where our money is going, and in the money parties, that's why we don't say, okay, what's my phone bill? I'll go look and put that in. We actually log into our bank statements and start with the first of the month and go through line by line, because then we don't miss anything. If we're saying, if we're just trying to remember bills and then we go search for it, we're going to miss a ton of things that way. So that's why we did money party that way.
I'm going to talk to you about, so social media is, you love and you hate it. But there's a lot of like triggers that point you to spend more money. Like for example, we're recording this on Friday and everyone, the mother, influencers, non-influencers, friends, family, they all posting their prime deals. Like there are deals you can go. And so, especially within the book world, there's a lot of like triggers. Well, you want to get this from the object, then it's there. Do you have any tips or ideas of how you can actually be more mindful about those, as opposed to being like just so trigger happy and like just like get out of Instagram, go buy the thing, come back to Instagram and set and repeat the cycle over and over?
Oh my gosh, it's a real struggle. I have a quiz actually called Should I Buy This?
Yeah.
I can send it to you. So anytime you want to buy, you can go through and answer questions at the time. But I would say especially for the sales. So especially for sales, to give yourself as much time as possible, because there can be that, like you mentioned, the trigger and like, I need this. I didn't even know about it. And now I need it. But when we give ourselves time, and sometimes with sales, it's not possible to give ourselves a full 48 hours, but it gives us time for that impulse to kind of wear off and then to see if this is something we really want. And you can use sales to your benefit if there are things that you need. I just would plan in advance. Like if you weren't going to buy it anyway, buying it on sale is actually, even if it's 40% off, you're spending 60% more than you would have. So it's not actually benefiting you. But if you do have a list of things and that you need and you've been waiting for and that you consciously and intentionally want, you can wait for them to go on sale and use the sale. But it's when the sale kind of comes into our space and makes us want something that we don't need or we won't want in 2 days is when we get into trouble. And I would have a lot of compassion for ourselves in these situations, because these companies, they know so much about us from our behavior, and we're targeted for a reason. And it's hard. And so I think to have compassion for when it does happen, and then try to take a step back and see, okay, what could I do differently next time? What happened? Was I in a certain mood? Was I bored at work? Could I think about how will I feel about this purchase in 1 week, in 1 month, when I'm paying off the credit card bill for it? Will I be regretting it? So trying to think through some of those points as we're going through. Even having a buddy, like I think that is one of the beauties of the Money Club, is you can go on and say, I really want to buy this. This is really hard. What do you all think? And when someone else in your life knows what your goals are, they can remind you of them. And I think that's another one of the downsides that we don't talk about money enough, is that your friend might think, oh yeah, you love it. You love books. We should buy it. But they don't know that like you also really want to save, and you really want to start building wealth, and you really want to pay off XYZ credit card or whatever the goal is. If they knew that, they might not encourage you, or they might talk through it a little bit more instead of being like, treat yourself, you deserve it. So I think it's a testament to talking about money. Not necessarily, you don't have to say, this is what I have in my bank account. But you could say, I really am trying to save more money, or I'm really trying to be more mindful of my spending. And so our friends and family can support us in that.
Oh, this is so helpful. So talk to us about your books. Did you do have to publish books now? Tell us all about them and why you should pick them up.
Yes. So my first book, The 30-Day Money Cleanse, it was my first program. So I started out just sharing about my own journey. And then people said, can you help me? And so I was helping people, coaching them. I got certified as a life coach. And then I started to realize I was saying the same things over and over, regardless of if someone was making $30,000 or $500,000, like a lot of the same complaints. And so what I decided to do was create a program. And this was the 30-Day Money Cleanse. And I ran it live for 5 years. And the results were really incredible. The average person saved $950 during the 30 days. And like mostly didn't feel restricted. And they felt like their life was still really full and good. And they weren't having to say no to everything. Because the whole point of the cleanse is that we let go of all wants, essentially, for a week. And then we add back things based on our values, based on our relationships and what's important to us. And so it feels really good. And the spending that we leave and the new lifestyle we have, it just feels good. And so people saved a large portion of that $950 even going forward. And so we turned that into my first book. It's colorful. It's a workbook. It has like those book elements in between the book pages. So it's a very special book that I love, all around budgeting and money mindset. And then my second book, Financial Adulting, that one kind of fills the gap for everything else. So it covers everything under the sun around money. Like it goes from goals and taxes, estate planning, debt, investing, retirement. So this is great. I have this plan and I have a really powerful money mindset from the money cleanse. But now I have specific questions about like, what is a traditional 401k and how do I choose an investment? And that's really where financial adulting comes in. And how I view it is, I want it to like sit on someone's wall. Of course, I want them to read it. But if they ever run into a question or they're like, oh, I left my company, I need to roll over my 401k. Let's see what the book says about that. Almost like a reference guide, because everything's not happening all at once in our money life, but it's there for you when you need it.
I will be so excited. Actually, tell us where you can find me online.
I am on all the socials at The Fiscal Femme, TheFiscalFemme. And my website, I have a lot of free resources at thefiscalfemme.com. So there's a lot of templates from like budgeting templates, net worth templates. We have a moving budget. So if you're moving and want to plan for that, and then also just fun guides like revamp your finances in 48 hours or take a step a day to help your finances, or there's a guide to money parties and high yield savings accounts. So there's lots of goodies on there for free.
There are. So thank you, Ashley, for having me on the show.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the What to Read Next podcast. If you enjoy our bookish conversations and want more recommendations, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Also, head on over to the What to Read Next blog for a list of books mentioned in today's show. Happy reading. Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.